Welcome to our Saturday Bhagavad Gita class. We are on chapter 1, and as usual, we will begin by chanting the entire first chapter, the verses. So kindly open the books to the first chapter, and we will all chant responsively. So we are on the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, wherein Lord Krishna is hearing from Arjun the beginning of his excuses. The reasons that Arjuna is going to give for not wanting to fight. And we have seen last time that there are basically 5 reasons in this chapter why we see Arjun is refusing to fight. We have seen that from verses 28 to 30, Arjuna is giving the first reason. And the first reason is compassion. He feels compassion for all his relatives and kinsmen, and therefore does not wish to kill any of them in the battle, even though they are arrayed on the enemy's side. The second reason is given in text 31 to 35, where Arjuna explains that there is no point in obtaining a kingdom or any opulence if one does not have any relatives to share it with. Victory by oneself is meaningless without any friends and social circle to enjoy it with. And then he will go on, and text 36 to 38, he gives the third reason, which is Arjuna feels that the Pandavas will be overcome by sin, because these are all exalted personalities, elders and so on, and kinsmen, and he feels it is a great sin to kill such people. So therefore Arjuna desists from fighting. This is the next reason. And after that, the fourth reason Arjuna gives is from text 39 to 43, where he cites the reason of the entire family tradition being destroyed due to the elders in the Kuru family being killed, and with the family traditions being destroyed and no one to protect and teach dharma within the family system, that there will be sin, the ladies will be unprotected, they will be exploited by unscrupulous men, and there will be unwanted progeny or children. All the religious activities will stop, and in this way both the killer and the killed will go to hell. And thus a hellish situation will be created for all concerned. And lastly, in text 44 and 45, Arjuna is exhibiting indecision. He doesn't know whether it is better to not fight or whether it is better to fight and kill his relatives. So last time we saw the first reason, which was compassion. Arjun is now coming to the second reason. In text 29, or in text 30, basically we have seen that Arjuna is further describing his very pathetic condition, and he is stating that his mind is reeling, his body is trembling. He only sees causes of misfortune. And he uses the words here, nimittani cha pashyami. I see the cause for which I am fighting, viparitani keshava, that the result will be opposite. What was the cause for which Arjuna and the Pandavas were fighting this battle? The cause was that they wanted their kingdom back. Because without that kingdom, they were deprived of their rightful activities as Kshatriyas. And when there is kingdom, when there is subjects, when there is wealth, etc., there is happiness. So therefore, happiness was a reason why the Pandavas wanted to get back their kingdom. But Arjuna feels viparitani, that the result of the war will be viparit or opposite to the intended cause for the very battle. So he was arguing that we are fighting to become happy so that we will get back what we lost, thinking that we will become happy in this process. But the result is going to be, okay, Shava, viparitani, it will be opposite. So on the contrary, instead of getting happiness, we will get distress. So in this way, Arjuna is going to very intelligently place arguments before Lord Krishna. But who is more intelligent than Lord Krishna? Who can refute arguments better than Lord Krishna? So he will let Arjuna speak. He will let Arjuna exhaust all his arguments. And then one by one, Krishna will start tackling each of these arguments. So starting with text 31, Arjuna was going to describe the second reason why he refused to fight. So kindly chant after me.
Nacha shreyo nupashyami hatva svajana mahave nakankshe vijayam krishna nacha rajyam sukhani cha.
Translation by Srila Prabhupada. I do not see how any good can come from killing my own kinsmen in this battle, nor can I, my dear Krishna, desire any subsequent victory, kingdom, or happiness. Again, Arjuna is continuing with the argument that he doesn't see how anything happy will come out of this whole battle. So he starts off by saying, Naja shreyo nupashyami. I don't see anything auspicious coming out of this. Shreyaha means auspicious, or the higher good, the ultimate good. There are two words that are important, shreyas and prayas. Prayas means immediate good, and shreyas means the higher, larger, or ultimate good. Even in the material field, we are seeing that we use the principles of prayas and shreyas. Let us give a simple example. A small child only wants enjoyment and pleasure. Whole day he wants to play. Night and day. And even as the age goes beyond 5, he or she still wants to play all day. Why? Because a child by nature demands immediate pleasure. The child has no conception of austerity, of doing something difficult now to obtain something pleasurable later. It can't plan, it does not have the capacity. But the parent understands. The child only wants to play all day, but I must send the child to school. Because if the child simply is allowed to play and waste the day like this, then when he or she grows up and will be uneducated, he or she will be nowhere in life. Therefore, even though the child doesn't like it, for the higher good of this child, I must send this child to school. So the child cries, he does so many tantrums, but the parent sends the child to school. Because the parent is aware of shreyas, the higher good, the larger good. Because the child is incapable of thinking of anything in the long term. So therefore we experience this all the time. Every day in our life we have shreyas and prayas. We give up temporary pleasures to achieve something greater. A student gives up pleasures when the examination time comes just so that he will get good results and he'll have a good future. The businessman is willing to forego a smaller profit in lieu of a larger profit that may come later on. So in this way we are always comparing between immediate gain and later gain. However, Arjuna's mistake is that the Shreyas that he is thinking of is also on the platform of the body. He is having a material conception of Shreyas, of ultimate good. So in Arjuna's conception of Shreyas, it is living with my family and being happy ever after. But is that possible? This is the general conception of people. Happiness means, I have my income, I have my family, and I will live with them and my society, and I will be happy. I will bring up my children, get them educated, get them married, and then everything will be fine. I have done my duties in life, and everything is going on well with my family. My family members have a very loving relationship. We are all happy together. Everything is going well. So generally, this is the mentality of people in the world. They are completely caught up in family life and think that family life is everything. They don't see anything beyond the family. And we see this happening, particularly in India. People have become very selfish. They do not want to think beyond the bounds of their family or their immediate bodily connections. So therefore, in the Shastras, such a conception of life or such a family life is called a deep dark well. So a person who only thinks of his family and all the interconnection and his whole consciousness is immersed in only that, in family matters and money matters, is like a person who is there in a deep dark well. Griham andhakupam. Such a griha is an andhakupa, a deep dark well. And the person is absorbed in this life thinking, this is everything. Now I am a happy man. And therefore people have this conception, society, friendship and love. These are the three things that people are after in life. And they equate happiness or the ultimate good with these things. Even the other religions of the world, they also talk in terms of a happy family life. Of course, that doesn't mean that family life should not be happy, but they do not know how to make this family life happy. So in any case, because people in the world are thinking only in terms of society, friendship and love as the ultimate good, they are forced to transmigrate in the cycle of birth and death. The great Vaishnav poet Vidyapati has said, the society, friendship and love, this family, relative, social circle, money, this whole affair is like a drop of water in a desert. When a man is thirsty in a desert and running about finding water, for days together he has not drunk any water, will a drop satisfy him? So similarly, a person who is seeking spiritual fulfillment, who is seeking God, who is seeking real happiness, can never be truly satisfied with just this so-called society, friendship and love. Temporarily, under illusion, we may imagine that we are happy in this illusory or make-believe happiness. But it is not possible. How can a drop of water of so-called pleasure give us happiness? And finally, family life has so many anxieties. You have to look after everybody. You have to be so diplomatic. You have to worry about so many things. So therefore, Arjuna's conception, because he is playing the role of an ordinary man, is that of family life and living with my relatives, enjoying my wealth and being happy. Because the family members are not there, what is the value of my wealth? So Arjuna is not thinking that whether wealth is there or not, family is there or not, if I please the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, then my life is successful. That is real Shreyas. That Arjuna is forgetting. Ultimately, real Shreyas is Lord Krishna. Nate viduh swartha gatim hi vishnum durashaya ye bahir arthamaninah andha yathandher upagiyamana te pisa tantra urdam nibaddhah. Prahlad in the Srimad Bhagavat explains, Nate viduhu swartha gatim hi vishnum. He explains that there are people, nate viduhu, they do not know what, sva artha, they do not know what is their real benefit in life. We have all heard the word swartha. But the word swartha is generally translated as selfishness. And it generally has a negative connotation. So if we say that somebody is a swarthy person, it is not a compliment. It means that he is a very selfish person. However, the word swarth can have two meanings depending on how we understand the word sva. Sva means self, I. If we think that I am the body, then swartha is not good. Then it is a normal understanding of the word swartha, selfishness. If I understand sva to mean atma or soul, which is the real meaning of sva, then that swartha is our shreyas, is our ultimate good. We must all strive for our spiritual welfare. Because in that only can we find real happiness and we can give others real happiness. Otherwise it is not possible. So Prahlad is saying, where does the shreyas lie? Nate vidhu sva artha gatim hi vishnum. Lord Vishnu or Lord Krishna is the gati or the destination or the only means of shreyas or the ultimate good for the people at large. But unfortunately, they do not know this. Nate viduhu. They don't understand that the ultimate good and the ultimate destination of all our activities and plans should be to attain to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu. So what do they think then? What do they think is the ultimate good? Bahirarthamaninaha. They think that all things of this outside world, the razzle-dazzle, chamak-dhamak of the outside world, the money, the cars, this and that, the social prestige, the power, the fame and the name, these are all the valuable things in life to achieve. And therefore they are spiritually blind, andha. Andha yatha andher. So just when an andha, a blind man, leads another blind man, they fall into a ditch. So similarly, the leaders of the society in various fields are all spiritually blind because they don't know the ultimate goal of life, the shreyas. They are all simply after prayas and at the most shreyas on the bodily platform like Arjuna is talking here. They do not understand. Therefore, tepi shatantriyam urudam nibaddha, because they are all tightly bound by the stringent laws of material nature. Material laws are very harsh laws. They do not excuse anyone. Even a small child, when it touches the fire will not think, oh, it is only a small child, I should not burn it. Has no conception. It is cold. So therefore, all those who are unaware of the ultimate good, the shreyas, they are bound tightly by the laws of material nature. So therefore, Arjuna, at this point of time, because he's playing the role of an ignorant person, is talking like the other worldly people. I want my family, I want my business, my job, everything is secure, and then I'm happy in my own little world. So therefore, he says, na cha shreyo anupashyami, I do not find anything auspicious coming out of it. Now, why does he say nothing is auspicious going to come out of it? Actually, because he fears that when nobody will be left to enjoy with him, there will be no happiness. Now, it is said in the scriptures that a sannyasi who has perfected yoga and a warrior who dies on the battlefield, both of them ascend to the higher planets. Specifically, they attain to the sun globe. The sun, the moon are also considered planets in this world. They are the higher planets which are attained by people who have performed pious activities. Those who have performed sins cannot attain to these higher planets. The higher planets cannot be attained by mechanical means like spacecraft and so on. Apollo, Sputnik, no. You cannot go to moon and sun. And scientists do not believe that there is life on the sun. But there is life. But that life doesn't have bodies like we do. The bodies of the living beings in the sun are also made up of fire.
Bhumi apa nalavayu kammano buddhra evacha ahankar iti yamme bhinna prakritir ashtadha.
In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains that this material nature is made up of 8 elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. We have experience of bodies made of earth and water, like our body is made of 70% water, and also substantially of solids or earth. But there are higher planets where the bodies become subtler and subtler and subtler. And on the sun globe, the living entities have bodies made of fire. But our scientists have no conception of this. Similarly, on the other planets, there are bodies made of subtler elements which we cannot even see with our eyes. They are all material things. So such sannyasis and warriors get elevated to the sun planet, and they enjoy for many thousands of years heavenly pleasures. Can we imagine? Till we have heard Bhagavad Gita philosophy, did we ever imagine that there is life on the sun? And what to speak of life on the sun? That life on the sun is a life of a higher degree of immaterial enjoyment. That there is enjoyment going on in the sun, material pleasure. We have never even dreamt of such a thing. We could never think such a thing is possible. Because we do not have idea of the way that God has created this material universe and all the 84 lakh species of life. So Arjuna is thinking, yes, those who are going to die on the battlefield, they will get the pious result, the Sukriti. They will attain to the higher planets and enjoy thousands of years of heavenly pleasure. But those who kill and emerge victorious, they do not get that. So it appears a contradiction. The person who is killed and lost gets heavenly pleasure. Well, the person who was killed and has won, he has to remain here on earth. So the answer that is given is that, well, he has won the battle, but he gets the kingdom. He gets the right to rule over his kingdom. He gets the pleasure of all the opulences and all the enjoyment of the kingdom. So that is the gain that he has after being emerging victorious in the battle. So what is Arjuna's reaction? Arjuna says, no, I still don't want. So what does he say here? Na kaankshe vijayam Krishna. I don't want victory. Kaankshe means desire. Na kaankshe vijayam Krishna, na cha rajyam sukhani cha. I don't want vijaya or victory. I don't want rajya or the kingdom. I don't want sukha or happiness. I don't want any of these things. They will attain the heavenly planets and enjoy. And I am supposed to be happy by getting the kingdom back. But I don't want it. Why don't I want it? He says, Hatva svajanamahave. He says, because this kingdom will be attained by killing Hatva in battle. Ahave. Whom? Svajana. My own people. Because this victory and kingdom will be attained by killing my own people, my relatives, my superiors, my blood relations, therefore I don't want this victory, I don't want this happiness. Therefore I see only inauspiciousness here. I don't think it worthwhile to go through this whole trouble and then engage in so much of sinful activity. Now, Arjuna is a Kshatriya. And as a Kshatriya, his only occupation should be to rule. According to the Varnashram system created by the Lord, the Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Shudras all have the respective occupational duties to perform. And one should not perform the occupational duties of the other. One should keep one's occupational duties and perform it even if there is some mistake, even if there is some flaw. It is better to perform one's own duty rather than perfectly perform another's duty. This is what Bhagavad Gita explains. In 18th chapter, Lord Krishna is going to mention this. So anyway, the Brahmanas are supposed to teach and to learn Patana Patana, Yajana Yajana, Dana Pratigraha. They are supposed to learn the scriptures, to teach the scriptures, to perform yajna, to teach others how to perform yajna, to receive charity, to give charity. So these are different activities of Brahmanas. So Kshatriyas are not expected to receive charity. They demand tribute, not charity. They will demand taxes, not charity. They will demand tribute from the other kings. Or they will demand taxes from the Vaishyas, the mercantile people. And therefore the Kshatriyas would accumulate this wealth and use it for the welfare of the people. So in this way, the whole Vedic system was organized very wonderfully. There was one major king who was a samrat or the emperor. Like for example, Yudhishthir Maharaj in his heyday, after he performed the Rajasuya Yajna. And he was the emperor. And it is not that he was the only king. There were so many kings all over the world. They accepted Yudhishthir Maharaj's sovereignty. And they paid tribute to him. And periodically they would send wealth and other things that were required by Yudhishthir. And when there was any battle, then they would send their armies to help Yudhishthir Maharaj fight that battle. So in this way the Kshatriya collected tribute from other Kshatriyas and he collected taxes from the Vaishyas or the mercantile people. But he never accepted charity. The Kshatriyas would give charity but not accept. The Brahmanas would both give and accept. The Brahmana would accept, and if he had excess, then he would give away the rest. So in this way, the Vaishyas had their respective duties. They were expected to give in charity, and also to give taxes to the government, and to look after the sadhus, and the brahmacharis, and the vanaprasthis, and the sannyasis. This was the duties of the Vaishyas. So in this way, the Shudras also had their duty. That is to serve the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas and Brahmanas. So all had their respective duties in life. Everything was well arranged. A very scientific system of social organization. It's a perfect system. Chatur Varnim Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashah. Lord Krishna explains in the 4th chapter that this Varna and Ashrama system, Chatur Varna, is Maya Srishtam. It is my creation, O Arjuna. And it is based on Guna and Karma Vibhagashah. These divisions are made according to our qualities and according to our activities. So therefore, we understand that Varnashram system is perfect because it is made by the Lord Himself. It is a very scientific system. So what is the duty of a Kshatriya? To rule. He cannot perform any other occupational duty. A Kshatriya cannot take the profession of teaching and learning the Shastras. He has to hear and he can speak also. But that cannot be his only activity. A Kshatriya cannot do business because business is the task of a Vaishya. A Kshatriya cannot take up a job with somebody because that is the job of a Shudra. So a Kshatriya should only rule. Nowadays, however, it is the Vaishya who has become the strongest. And it is the Shudras who are in power. And the Vaishyas are controlling the Shudras through money. This is how the whole modern social, political and economic system is working. The whole system has turned upside down. So nobody is really acting according to their particular propensities. So the Kshatriya's only job was that he would rule. So the predicament of the Pandavas was that they were Kshatriyas. They had finished their 13 years of exile in the forest. And now they had to have a kingdom to rule. And the only way they would get the kingdom back is if they would reclaim it by fighting with their cousins and brothers. And Yudhishthir Maharaj, being a great devotee of the Lord and being spiritually very accomplished and learned, he made a tremendous compromise. He sent his messenger to the Kauravas in the court of Dhritarashtra with a proposal that our 13 years are over and we desire our kingdom back. And when there were signs of dissent from Duryodhan and his friends, at that time Yudhishthir Maharaj said, "All right, don't give us the full kingdom if you don't want, but at least our share, half, 50%, which is ours, in the prastha, Hastinapur you keep. And even that, if you don't want to give, at least give us 5 villages, one village for each of the brothers. So at least he will have one village to rule. As a kshatriya, he must have something to rule, even if it is one village." And at that time, Duryodhan very haughtily, arrogantly replied that, "What to speak of 5 villages, I will not give as much land as is there even on the head of a pin." So then there was no recourse left. To perform their occupational duty, they would have to fight. Because otherwise, how would they regain and perform and do their duties as kshatriyas? And moreover, it was the duty of the kshatriya to uphold dharma and to fight according to dharma. So therefore, Arjuna is now forgetting this point. He is forgetting his material position. What to speak of his spiritual position? The spiritual position is that we are eternal servants of the Lord and we should follow the Lord's instructions. Because in the 18th chapter, Lord Krishna is going to explain Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, that abandon all varieties of dharma and surrender unto me. So we have to do whatever the Lord says. This is real dharma. But Arjuna has not only forgotten this spiritual instruction, he has also apparently forgotten his material position as a kshatriya, that he is supposed to fight. So rather, Arjuna is now expressing interest in going to the forest and living a secluded life there. Because he is thinking that without fighting this war, I will not get my kingdom back. But to fight the war, I have to kill my cousins and brothers, which I don't want to do. So better I go to the forest. So this is Arjuna's thinking. The acharyas have explained wonderfully this whole background and what is going on in Arjuna's mind. So let us see how Arjuna further continues his dialogue with Lord Krishna. We will chant texts 32 to 35. Kindly chant responsively.
Kim no rajena govinda, kim bhoga jivitena va, yesham arthe kankshitam no rajyam bhoga sukhani cha, ta imeva sthita yuddhe pranastyaktva dhanani cha. Acharyah pitarah putrah tathaiva cha pitamahah matulah shvashurah pautrah shyalah sambandhinastatha etanahantumichhami gnatopi madhusudana api trailokya rajasya heto kim no mahi krite nihatya dhartra rashtrannah ka priti sya janardana
translation for these four verses. This is Arjuna speaking. O Govinda, of what avail to us are a kingdom, happiness, or even life itself, when all those for whom we may desire them are now arrayed on this battlefield? O Madhusudan, when teachers, fathers, sons, grandfathers, maternal uncles, fathers-in-law, grandsons, brothers-in-law, and other relatives are ready to give up their lives and properties and are standing before me, why should I wish to kill them, even though they might otherwise kill me? O maintainer of all living entities, I am not prepared to fight with them, even in exchange for the three worlds, let alone this earth. What pleasure will we derive from killing the sons of Dhritarashtra? So Arjun is becoming stronger and stronger in his resolve to not fight. So he's saying, Apitrailokya Rajasya Heto Kimnu Mahikrite. He says, what to speak of the earth, Mahi? Mahi is another name for the earth. Mahikrite. So what to speak of the proprietorship or the emperorship of the world, even if I were to get kingship over all the three worlds, Apitrailokya Rajasya, the Bhulok, Bhuvarloka, Swargaloka, still I don't want to fight. So Arjuna has lost all motivation to fight. And now Arjuna wants to act according to his own idea, according to his own mentality. So here he addresses Krishna as Govinda. Kimno Rajena Govindaha. Govinda is another name for Krishna. We have seen earlier on in this chapter so far, Lord Krishna has been addressed by many names. Krishna is of course the chief name by which he is addressed. But do you remember the other names by which Krishna is addressed in the verses before this? Madhusudan, yes. No, yet, before this. So far he is not called Madhusudan. Rishikesh is one. Kapidhvaja is Arjun, not Krishna. Madhava, he is called Madhav. And Achyuta. Lord Krishna has infinite names, many, many names, each of them denoting his particular qualities or characteristics. And here Krishna is calling, and Arjuna is calling Krishna as Govinda. Go means senses, and the word go also means cow. So Govinda means one who gives pleasure to and enlivens the cows and the senses, our own senses. So Arjuna is taking up this point and deliberately calling Krishna Govinda because he wants Krishna to sanction his desire. So many times we have people coming that I want to do this, so is it okay? So actually in their mind what they want is that we should say okay. They have come with a firm plan, they want to do something, they just want a yes to hear from us. So Arjuna is coming in this spirit. He is coming to Krishna and calling him Govinda. You are always satisfying the senses of all living beings. So please satisfy my senses. My mind says that this time that I don't want to fight this battle, although it is my occupational duty. I want to go to the Himalayas and live the life of a recluse, even though I am a Kshatriya. So please sanction this. But Arjuna is forgetting that actually God is not our order supplier. Normally when people come to a temple, they come with a shopping list. They come with a list of things that they want to ask from God. Please give me this, this, this and this. And if they don't get it, then they feel very upset with God. And many times they lose faith. But this is not the genuine devotion to God. This is not spiritual life. Spiritual life means to actually try to satisfy God and to please Him, rather than to use God to please our senses, which Arjuna is trying to do now. So when we try to please the Lord, automatically we become happy. This is the technique of becoming happy in life. If someone really wants to become happy, instead of striving for his or her own happiness, he or she should try to make the Lord happy. Then he will become happy. Such a simple trick. One has to know the trick to be happy in life. But people do not know this trick. So they simply struggle for happiness, go to temples, churches, mosques, etc., praying that please give me this money, give me that pleasure, give me this power, position, and they become very miserable. But when we actually serve the Lord, we become very happy. Therefore it is described in the scriptures, Sarvopadhi Vinirmuktam Tat Paratvaina Nirmalam Rishikesha Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Ruchate. When we use our Rishika, our senses, in the service of the Lord of the senses, Rishikesha, Rishika Isha, Isha means controller, that is called Bhakti, Bhaktir Uchyate. And when one performs Bhakti in this fashion, Sarva Upadhi Vinirmuktam, we become freed of all false material designations, Upadhis. At this present moment, in the bodily concept of life, we imagine ourselves to be many things. We think, I am human being, I am animal, I am rich, I am poor, I am businessman, I am engineer, I am doctor, I am male, I am female, I am young, I am old. But these are all upadhis, these are all designations for the body. But the real soul is different from this body. So because our senses at this time are contaminated, so we are not able to understand this real designation that I am eternally servant of the Lord. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us, Jivera Swarupoye Krishna Nityadas, that the Jiva or the Atma is eternally the servant of Lord Krishna. But because of our impure senses, contaminations in our heart, we are not able to understand our Swarup, our true identity. Tat paratvena nirmalam. But when we do bhakti, when we serve the Lord to please Him, not for our pleasure, but for His pleasure, then what happens? Nirmalam. Our senses become nirmal. They become pure, clean. And then we experience genuine peace, happiness, joy, knowledge, and so on. So in any case, having addressed Krishna as Govinda, he is also calling him by another name here. He is addressing him as Madhusudana. Etanahantum icchami gnatopi Madhusudana. He is saying, O Madhusudan, you are asking me to kill my relatives. So the Acharyas are explaining that what is Arjuna thinking in his mind when he is saying this. He is saying that your name is Madhusudan. There was an asura or a demon called Madhu, and Krishna killed him one time. So because of that, Krishna is also called as Madhusudan. Just like one time Krishna killed a demon called Mura. So Krishna is called Murari. Ari means enemy. So the enemy or the killer of the demon Mura is called Murari. So similarly, Krishna is also called Madhusudan. He is also called Kansa Nishudana, because he killed Kansa. So Arjuna is trying to use these names to indicate to Krishna that, my dear Krishna, you are Madhusudan, you killed the demon Madhu who was your enemy. But then why is it that you are asking me to kill my own relatives and not my enemies? You should also ask me to kill only enemies, and when it comes to relatives, then you should be compassionate. You should give some concession to me. And then he also uses another word. He uses the word Janardana. And he says, my dear, Janardhan, because the word Janardhan means one who maintains the living entities. So how is it that you, as a maintainer of the living entities, now desire to kill all the living beings? But it is explained that the word Janardhan has another meaning also. Ardhana means also killer. And Jana refers to people. It also refers to atheistic people. So the word Janardhan means not only one who maintains all living beings, but also means one who destroys the atheistic. So Arjuna is saying that, all right, even if I accept that the word Janardhan now means killing everybody else, killing the atheists, but it is better that you should kill, because for you there is no sin involved. But if I kill, there will be sin involved. So it is better that you continue this task and you kill. So in this way, Arjuna is trying to find various ways and means to wriggle out of his situation. He doesn't want to do this battle, and he knows that Krishna is going to be determined. By nature, you see, the devotees are soft-hearted. Even if somebody offends them, they forgive that person very easily. They don't take it to heart. This is the nature, the characteristic of a bhakta. Arjun is an ideal bhakta, a great devotee of the Lord, all the Pandavas, even Bhima. So therefore, Arjun very quickly became compassionate and wanted to forgive. But Krishna, he was determined to have them destroyed. Why? Because even though the devotees may forgive those who have offended them, Krishna never forgives them. This is Krishna's nature. Just as the parents of a child become more angry when their child is insulted, when they themselves are insulted, they become very angry. So therefore, Lord Krishna is willing to tolerate insults to himself, but he doesn't want to tolerate any insults or offenses committed against his own devotees. So there were so many offenses and apradhas that the Kauravas had committed towards the Pandavas right from their childhood time. So that this would be the time when the Kauravas and their allies would have to be destroyed. Inasmuch as Arjuna was determined to not fight, Krishna was determined to fight. So being clouded by the family affection, Arjuna could not understand that Lord Krishna had already killed the Kauravas. Because Lord Krishna is the personified time Shakti. He is time himself. And later on in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is going to explain to Arjuna that I have already killed these people, Arjuna. Nimitta matra bhava savyasachin. O Savyasachin, you simply become my instrument. Don't think that you are going to kill them. I have already done that. The job of killing has already been done by me. All you can do is to become my instrument and get that glory. The glory will go to you, although I have done it. But I want to use you as an instrument, because the Lord likes to glorify His devotees. He likes to see them getting appreciated and becoming famous everywhere. Just like a parent likes to see the son getting prosperous and the son getting famous and getting appreciation. So therefore, Arjuna at this time was not aware, and he is saying that even after obtaining the whole three worlds, because I will not have the company of my dear friends and relatives and my other social circle, what is the use? So I don't want this. I don't want to fight. There is no use obtaining even the three worlds. And thus, in this way, Arjuna is demonstrating the mentality of the average person of this world, who is conditioned by the material conception of life, who thinks himself to be the body, and who is bound up in this world due to affection based on his body. So one must come to the spiritual platform of understanding that Lord Krishna is our eternal well-wisher. And if we simply follow Lord Krishna's orders in our life, then our life can really be happy. Now, having hinted at the question of how killing his relatives is going to be inauspicious, now Arjuna is going to come to the third reason why he does not want to fight. And what is that third reason? That is, that he will commit sin. So let us see what is Arjuna's argument. So please come to text 36.
Papam evashraye dasman hatvaitana tatayinah tasman naravayam hantum dhartra rashtransa bandhavan svajanam hi katham hatva sukhinah syam madhava.
Translation: sin will overcome us if we slay such aggressors. Therefore, it is not proper for us to kill the sons of Dhritarashtra and our friends. What should we gain, O Krishna, husband of the goddess of fortune? And how could we be happy by killing our own kinsmen? So Arjuna's worry now is, papam eva ashrayed asman. If we kill these people, hatvaitan atatayinaha, even though they are aggressors, but they are our kinsmen, dhartarashtransa bandhavan, these people are the children of our uncle, and if we kill them, sin will come upon us. We cannot do this. Now actually, Arjuna is unaware of what sin really is. What is sin? Sin, very simply put, is disobedience to the laws of God. Very simple. But in order to know whether we are sinning or not, we should know what the laws of God are. Just like, what is the meaning of a criminal? A criminal is one who has violated the laws of the state. But if we do not know what the laws of the state are, how can we decide who is a criminal and who is not a criminal? So many people in the world are under the conception, I am a good person, I don't commit any sins, I don't harm any other people. So what need is there for me to take to devotion? We should be good, do good and be happy. No need to go to temple, hear Bhagavad Gita and do all this puja paath and Hare Rama, Hare Krishna. What is the need for all this? Just be good. I am a good man. There is no one in this world who thinks that he is not a good man. Everybody thinks he is a good man. So the question is not of us thinking in our own philosophy whether we are good people or not. We have to think from the point of view of God. What is the criterion that God has laid down to decide whether we are good people or not? And to understand that, to decide that, we have to know the laws of God. So people normally, thinking that they are good people, are performing so many sins, and they don't even know that these things are sins. And they have their own rationale, their own logic to explain why these things are all right and permissible. So when people start thinking according to their own intelligence, based on their own material calculations, without having any spiritual understanding, in their ignorant condition, they perform many sins. And when we perform sins, we get the sinful reaction of that. And that is suffering. So why are people suffering in this world? People are suffering because they have committed sin. Why have people committed sin? Because of ignorance. So if the ignorance is removed, then automatically there will be happiness in life. Because no more will there be sinners here. So therefore it is very clear to understand that sin is the instruction of God. Dharmam tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. Dharma or religion are the laws or codes enunciated by the Supreme Lord. It cannot be manufactured by any human being. It is not a question of what you believe personally or what I believe personally. Our personal beliefs have no value. What God has put down before us is what is valuable. Therefore, when Srila Prabhupada used to comment on many other commentaries and translations of Bhagavad Gita, where they have distorted the original meaning of the Gita, he would say, why do they call it Bhagavad Gita? They should call it their own Gita. Because they are giving their own interpretation to this. We should accept literally whatever Lord Krishna is asking us to do. The direct understanding of the Shastra. So therefore, it is necessary to understand the word sin from this context. So Arjuna, however, has forgotten that Lord Krishna, the father of Dharma, is standing in front of him, asking him to do a certain activity. Then where is the question of sin? Sin comes when we disobey the laws of God. And if you obey the instructions of the Lord, even if they conflict with some lower instruction that the Lord Himself may have given earlier, still you are protected because that instruction has come from God. And if you refuse to follow that instruction of God that He has given, on the plea that it conflicts with another lower instruction that God has given earlier, then that is a sin. We all know the story of how Yudhishthir Maharaj was forced to lie on the battlefield of Kurukshetra regarding Ashwatthama. When it was told that Dronacharya could only be killed by deception, he could not be killed by normal means. So Krishna worked out a plan and he told Bhima, or rather he told the Pandavas, that Dronacharya is very attached to his son, Ashwatthama. So when Dronacharya hears that Ashwatthama has died, then he will lose the desire to live and he will give up his life. Because Drona, like Bhishma, had the benediction of Ichchamrityu, Ichchamarana. They could die whenever they wished. They could not be killed at any other time. So Drona was so powerful that he was just going on fighting so viciously, so ferociously, he was unconquerable. So when Krishna made this suggestion, everyone was aghast. Arjun, Yudhishthir began to think, oh, what is this? But Bhima had no second thoughts. He ran immediately upon hearing this. And immediately with his mace, he killed an elephant on the battlefield in the Pandava camp only, that was called Ashwatthama. There was another elephant called Ashwatthama. So he killed that elephant and then he ran toward Dronacharya shouting, Ashwatthama is dead, Ashwatthama is dead. So Dronacharya got a shock. Ashwatthama is dead? And at the same time, Dronacharya saw a very extraordinary sight. Certain sages, rishis, munis from the higher planets, they came in their subtle celestial forms, in the air, in the sky. And standing in the sky, they spoke to Drona. Only Drona could see them. Nobody else on the battlefield could see them. And they began to admonish Drona. Because Drona was the architect behind the killing, the unjust killing of Abhimanyu. It was against Dharma. The way Abhimanyu was killed. And the man behind the whole plan was Dronacharya. So they condemned him for his adharmic act. And they also said, my dear Drona, you have performed another adharma. You have received many celestial weapons from the higher planets, but you have used these weapons against ordinary mortals on the earth planet, which is wrong. And it is a great offense on your part. Therefore, enough is enough now. As a Brahmana, you ought not to do such things. So both these events combined, one was Bhima's cry about Ashwatthama being killed, and the second was his sages coming down. Dronacharya became very disturbed in his mind. And Dronacharya thought that only one person whom I can trust now, who will tell me the truth, is Yudhishthira. Because he is Dharmaraj. He is always following the laws of Dharma. Under any condition in life, he never deviates from Dharma. Therefore, I can at this moment rely only on Yudhishthira to tell me the truth. So in the middle of the battlefield, he walked up to Yudhishthira and asked Yudhishthira, "My dear Yudhishthira, please tell me honestly, is Ashwatthama dead?" And Krishna was indicating, "Yes, go on, go on." Krishna was indicating. And Yudhishthira hesitated. His heart was heavy like a big stone. And finally, he put down his head and said, "Ashwatthama," and under his breath, he said, "The elephant." But Ashwatthama, he said loudly, "is dead," he also said loudly, but the words "the elephant," he said very softly. So it's as good as a lie. The truth hidden is also as good as a lie. A truth not spoken when asked specifically is also in the same category as a lie. So Yudhishthira had to say this lie. Till this time, his chariot was moving above the ground in the battle. In all these days, it never touched the ground because of his purity and his dharma. The chariot was always flying few centimeters above the ground. But the moment Yudhishthira said this, his chariot touched the ground. So some commentators say that this is because Yudhishthira spoke a lie. Therefore his chariot touched the ground now. But there are other commentators who say that the chariot did not touch the ground because Yudhishthira lied. Rather, it's the opposite. The chariot touched the ground because Yudhishthira hesitated to lie. Because this instruction to lie was given by Krishna. Krishna, the father of Dharma, was standing there to tell him, "Lie." And he said, "No, how can I lie?" So that was a sin. Normal day activity, telling lies is a sin. But when Krishna tells you to sin, or to lie, and you don't lie, then that is a sin. So see how this law of spiritual life or godliness is so intricate. We have to have very good understanding of these things. Otherwise we will get bewildered when we read scriptures like Mahabharata or even in our daily activities. So therefore Yudhishthira Maharaj had to have a vision of hell momentarily though because of this. So the point is that whatever the Lord enunciates is dharma. And the Lord was there in front of Arjun telling him to fight, but still Arjun was thinking this is sin. Krishna is telling him kill your relatives and Arjun is thinking it is sin. Because Arjuna, playing the role of a conditioned role of a soul, is thinking in terms of the body. He has forgotten that Krishna is the father of dharma and that disobeying Krishna's instructions is actually sin. How common is this in this world today? Krishna is such a misunderstood personality. People do not understand Krishna's nature. They do not understand Krishna's activities because they have not heard from the mouths of devotees coming in parampara. So each one speculates according to his own whims and fancies. And therefore there is total confusion regarding the proper understanding about Lord Krishna, about Bhagavad Gita, about Mahabharata, and indeed about Dharma itself. But when we hear through the parampara, through the commentaries of great realized souls like Srila Prabhupada, then everything becomes as clear as daylight. What is sin, what is not sin, all these things become very clear. So we will continue with this subject and this verse. Next Saturday, we will talk more about Arjuna's reasons for not wishing to fight. So thank you very much. Now we will have darshan of that same Lord Krishna who ordered Yudhishthir to lie. And this is the highest truth in life. So let us enjoy this darshan and chant the holy names of the Lord. After this, there will be prasad, question answers and then prasad. So please do not go before you take prasad. Hare Krishna. Say that they were already killed, it means not physically, but that Krishna had already decided that these people are going to die. So at the proper time, he had arranged their death. So they were still alive at that time, but they were already dead in the sense that death was destined for them in this battle because Krishna had arranged that. But in that sense, we say that they are already dead. Is there any other question?
Gautam Buddha, before he became Buddha, was a son of a Raja. Then he left his Kshatriya caste and he has taken to this Brahman caste or doing the devotee, that is devotion. Then how do you interpret this?
As I was mentioning, one's varna or activity, occupational duty depends not on one's birth, but on guna and karma. Chatur varnem maya srishtam guna karma vibhagashah. It doesn't say janma karma vibhagashah. Guna karma, according to your qualities. So what happened with Buddha is not something unusual. It has happened time and again in the history, as is mentioned in our Vedas and Puranas. There are innumerable such instances when people have given up their kingdom and gone to the forest to live the life of a recluse. In fact, this was recommended that after the king had ruled for a certain number of years, then he would take sannyas. He would first take vanaprastha or he would eventually take sannyas in the forest. King Bharat left his kingdom at a very young age, left his queens, his sons, his praja, everything. King Rishabdev left the kingdom when he was older, when his sons were grown up. He instructed his sons and then left and wandered in the forest and performed austerities. The Pandavas did that. All the great kings in the past, in the Vedic history, have renounced their kingdoms at some point in time and went and they have gone in search of God, to perform austerities, to perfect their life. So this was the custom at that time. So there is nothing unusual. And even among Maharaj Rishabdev's sons, for example, he had 100 sons. It is not that all were Kshatriyas, although they were born from a Kshatriya father, but they had tendencies and propensities that were different. Out of Maharaj Rishabdev's 100 sons, the eldest was King Bharat. He was a Kshatriya. He ruled the kingdom after him. The next 9 were Paramhansas. They became Vaishnavas, great devotees of the Lord, called Navayogendras. Then the next 80 were Brahmanas, or rather were Kshatriyas. And again the balance were Brahmanas. They became Brahmans. So some among Rishabdev Maharaj's sons became Brahmins, some became Kshatriyas and some became Paramhamsas. So therefore Varnashram system is not based upon birth. It is based upon qualities and upon activities. But today unfortunately everybody thinks in terms of Varnashram as the so-called caste system. The word caste system has become a very bad word today, because it is existing today in its distorted form, not in its original form. In the original form, this system is called the Varnashram Dharma. But nowadays, nobody is following this Varna and Ashram system. And everybody thinks that it is on the basis of birth. So anybody who is born in a Brahman family is called a Brahman, even though he may be worse than a Shudra. And if there is someone born in a Shudra family, if he has the qualities of a Brahman, he is not considered a Brahman. He is considered SC, ST, this, that. So many things are going on in society now.
So on what basis did you say that now the persons who are ruling us are Shudras?
On the basis of their qualities. One has to know who is a Brahman. A Brahman's qualities are described in Bhagavad Gita and the Shastra. Shamo, Damo, Tapashaucham, Kshanti, Rajavam, Evacha. So all these qualities, one who has, he is called a Brahman. Similarly, a Kshatriya, who is supposed to be the ruler, he also has to have these qualities that are mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara Bhavascha, Yuddhecha Apalayanam. He has to be in the battle in the forefront. There is no concept of a leader sitting in his office, air-conditioned office, and the soldiers are going to die on the battlefield. This is not a Kshatriya. Kshatriya means one who is going to lead the battle from the front, not at the back, by radio and instructions. So we see that people today, because the Praja is totally in the lower modes of Rajas and Tamas, the whole society is electing people also who are in that mode. We know what is happening in our political circles. Generally, yatha raja tatha praja. As the leaders are, so the common man becomes. But today it is becoming the reverse. Yatha praja tatha raja. So as the people are, the same kind of people become leaders, all who are selfish, who are materially motivated, who don't care for the welfare of the people, who simply want to cheat and exploit the public. Everybody knows that people who clamor for political office, most of them do it only for the sake of making a lot of money, so that by the time the term of office is over, they have made enough. This is a situation. How can such a person be called a Kshatriya, a person who is ruling? A Kshatriya is supposed to treat his children, his Praja, like his own children. He is supposed to safeguard them, their property, their well-being. And he is supposed to give his life even in their protection. But this spirit we do not find. So therefore most people in the political field, it has come down to such a low level now in Kali Yuga. The whole science of government has become very gross and very sinful. So therefore Prabhupada said that the so-called system of democracy is not democracy, but it is demon crazy. Like demons who have gone crazy. Simply full of their own selfish desires, people are there acting crazily. And therefore the other people are also prompted to act crazily as a reaction. And then we see what is happening in the world now, last few days especially. All demons acting crazily. Yandha, I quoted earlier, Andha yathandhe rupaniyamana tepi shatantrayam urudam nibaddhah. Blind people leading other blind people, they all fall into a ditch. This is the present day condition of society because they have no spiritual training. The Kshatriyas are supposed to be trained by the Brahmanas. If you read the Srimad Bhagavatam and the other Puranas, you will find that all the Kshatriyas had Brahmana teachers with them. And not only were they trained in the military arts, but they were trained in the scriptures also, in Dharma. And if you read Chanakya's Arthashastra, you will see that a king had to spend 4 hours every day on scriptural study and discussions, Shastra. And he would get to sleep hardly anything. Because he had to spend time for his military, for his spies, for his administration, for his economic affairs, so many things. He had to spend several hours just trying to imbibe his consciousness, spiritual things, because he was in the seat of power. And if he didn't have the proper spiritual consciousness, he would go crazy. Because there is a saying in English that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So a person who gets power but he doesn't have the spiritual purity to deal with that power, he goes crazy. He uses that power only for his personal interest. So there was a self-controlling system. The Kshatriyas were not absolute monarchs. They were benevolent monarchs and they were controlled by the Brahmanas. And when the Brahmanas saw that the Kshatriya was respectful of Brahmanas, was following Dharma carefully, then the Brahmanas also respected the Kshatriya. And when the Kshatriya saw that the Brahmanas were qualified, he would accept teaching from them and give respect to them. So the Brahmanas and Kshatriyas gave mutual respect to each other. The Kshatriyas protected the Brahmanas. The Brahmanas guided the Kshatriyas. The Vaishyas provided the income. And the Shudras served everybody else. And this was the way the whole society was organized. A very scientific system. But today, those in power do not follow. There may be rare exceptions here and there. But as a general rule, we observe this all over the world. There is a saying nowadays that politics is the last refuge of the scoundrel. That nowadays it has become such that those who are the worst lot, they go to this field. So therefore it is necessary that people in the political field also should come to this path. Those among them who are not like the rest, who are little pure-hearted, who are inclined towards dharma, at least such people should come together, come on the Krishna conscious platform and make it an occasion or a forum to actually transform the society. Srila Prabhupada said that if you want to make a significant change in the society from the spiritual point of view, then you have to change 50% of the masses. That is a huge task. Can you change 50% of the public? Crores of people in India. How many crores now? 100 crores. So can you make 50 crores people Krishna conscious in a short time? But he said, okay, just make 10% of the leaders Krishna conscious. That will have the same effect. Because the leaders are in a powerful position. So if they become Krishna conscious, they can change the whole society. Yad yad acharati sheshtas tatta deveti rojanah sayat pramanam kurute lokastat anuvartate. As the leaders do in society, so the common man shall follow. So this is the condition today. Kalau Shudra Sambhavaha. In Kali Yuga, not just the leaders, even the followers also practically are all Shudras. Everybody is of the same mentality. So therefore, this Krishna consciousness movement is there to lift people to a higher consciousness. To make people understand that there is a higher value in life. Krishna consciousness.
If I have sinned once, I have violated the rule of God, law of God, I must be penalized, I must compensate for it. But then also Lord says, if you come to me, I forgive you. Is it that he forgives the sinner, or is it that he gives strength to the sinner to be able to undergo the punishment?
Both. He also forgives one who is genuinely repentant, and then he also tests him to see how repentant he really is. But he will never test us more than we have the capacity to bear. Just like in a school, a student of the second standard will never be given an examination for the eighth standard. Whether he is a good student or bad student, he will get only the standard, the test of that standard. So according to our level of spiritual advancement, the Supreme Lord will test us. He may punish us, but that punishment actually is for our purification, for our rectification. Those who are advanced in spiritual understanding, they never misunderstand the miseries that come in their life. They always see this as a mercy of the Lord, as means to rectify their mentality so that very quickly they will come to spiritual perfection. The ultimate conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita is Sarva Dharman Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayishyami Ma Shuchah. Here you see this verse over here. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I shall deliver you from all reaction. Do not fear. So Lord Krishna is saying, this dharma, that dharma, forget it, just come to me. Surrender to me, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja. If you take exclusive shelter of me, I will take care of your sins. Don't worry. I will forgive you. Everything, all the sins you have committed so far, in all your births in this material world, I will take care. But surrender. But come to me. So that is the Lord's demand. So if we follow His instructions, live our life the way that He has wanted us to live, then He takes away and forgives. The Lord is most forgiving. What to speak of one sin, He will forgive us of millions of sins, of more sins than we can ever imagine to commit. He can sin all, forgive all of those in one second. But we must have this spirit of surrender. Then He says, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Mokshayishyami. I will free you from all sins. The spirit of surrendering, that means the desire or the willingness to give up one's independentness, one's independence, to obey the instructions of God, to follow unconditionally whatever the Lord is saying. If the Lord is saying in Gita, which is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, you can see that shloka over there, essence of Bhagavad Gita. Later on, you can read that verse. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mam evaishasi satyam te pratijane priyosime. My dear Arjuna, always think of me, always remember me, become my devotee, offer your homage unto me, worship me, and you will come to me without fail because you are my very dear devotee and friend. So Krishna is instructing us this. So we should follow. So if we follow Krishna's instructions, then we have the spirit for surrender. Because surrender is not something we can achieve immediately, overnight. For so many millions of lives, we have resisted the idea of surrender to anyone or anything. So if somebody asks us immediately to surrender everything to God, it is not easy. So we begin by following His various instructions. So when we come in the company of devotees of the Lord, then this spirit is developed. This spirit flourishes in the heart, it grows. And finally it comes to the point of full surrender. Atma Samarpan.
Yes? Swamiji, this word Swartha, if we break it into two parts, that is Swa-Artha. Does it mean self-realization?
Yes. Artha means hit or benefit. So, Swa-Artha means one's own benefit. Something for one's benefit. So, when we understand that I am the Atma, it is one's spiritual benefit, which is our real welfare. Yes, last question over there.
When Krishna Himself has said that Shudras are going to rule, how can we change this scene then?
Well, Krishna has not exactly said that Shudras will rule, but this is the condition that we see. The Shastras do say that in Kali Yuga, this is going to be the condition. But He also tells us that as His faithful servants and devotees, we must try to spread the message. And the 10,000 years, and we are at the beginning of the 10,000 years now, is called the Golden Age in Kali Yuga. This Golden Age has been inaugurated by the special avatar of Lord Krishna for this age, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as you can see there. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the incarnation for this age. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has inaugurated a Golden Age of 10,000 years, where gradually things are going to get purified and most of the people will become devotees. Believe it or not, it is going to happen. And what we are reading in the papers nowadays is the process of purification. The cleansing process has begun. And eventually only the devotees will survive. And only those who are surrendering to the Lord, they will be around. And all others, not only the sinful people, but even those who think that they are pious but who are actually not surrendered to the Lord, they will also not survive. And then the Golden Age shall flourish, where Krishna consciousness shall be spread all over the world. This is not some imaginary wishful thinking. This is going to happen. Only question we can ask is whether we want to be instruments in the evolving of this whole wonderful scenario or not. Just like Krishna said, I have already killed these soldiers, Arjun, you just be my instrument. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has already said, the golden age is here, Krishna consciousness will spread all over the world. It has already started, Srila Prabhupada did that. Now it is growing. It will grow from strength to strength. So the choice is ours whether we want to be instruments and participate in the expansion of this mission and make our life successful and help others to make their life successful. That choice rests with us. But it is going to happen. If we don't do it today, somebody else in the future is going to come and do it. The credit will go to them. Now, it is 500 years since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come. 5,000 years since Lord Krishna appeared. And it is only 500 years since Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come. So still there are more than 9,500 years left.
Hare Krishna. As you said that one cannot migrate to other planets just by having any of the material means. So how is that scientists claim that they have already landed on the moon?
Well, this is another subject. Prabhupada did not accept that they have landed on the moon. Just recently we have got so many compact disc CDs and other things on the internet. So many things where people, scientists and technologists from USA also coming up slowly, slowly, one by one, saying that this whole moon landing is a hoax. It never happened. It all just happened in one fine studio in the Arizona desert, in America. It is just simply a game in the ego battle between Russia and America at that time. And he said, even if they went to some other planet, it was not the moon. Because the moon is full of wonderful beings. It is a pious planet where they drink somras and have so many other wonderful engagements. And when our astronauts went there, they say they saw only dust and rock. So surely they did not go to the moon. Even if they went somewhere else. So more and more people are realizing this now as time goes on. So we accept the verdict of the scriptures. We don't have so much faith in our scientists, even though we use the things that they make, like the microphone and many other things, because we use them for Krishna's service. We use that, we don't mind. But our lifestyle and our philosophy is not based upon the inventions of the discoveries and the theories of the scientists. It is based upon our Shastra. So thank you very much. Now we will have prasadam. Yeah.
It's said that everything is destined by Krishna. That is, whatever we have no say in changing anything. So if we have to become a devotee, it's the will of Krishna. So somebody who is committing sin is because it's destined by Krishna that they are doing that.
No. When everything is destined, it doesn't mean that what we do is destined. It means that what will happen to us is destined. There is a difference. What is going to happen to us is our past karma. Our past karmic reactions are going to come back to us. That is destined. But how we are going to act now and in the future is in our hands. That is our choice. Whether we want to surrender to God or we don't want to surrender to God. God, of course, being all-knowing, He knows how we will use our free will. Whether we will surrender to Him, when, how, if not, then when, etc. He knows everything. But He doesn't dictate to us whether we should surrender now or tomorrow or not at all. So we always have our independence, which we can use to either surrender or not surrender to God. So what we do in our life is not destined. That is our free will. But what happens to us, what is beyond our control, that is destined. And what is that destiny? Simply our past activities coming back, bearing fruit now, at this time. So, shall we? That whatever sins we suffer, or whatever sufferings we experience in life, is it only because of our own personal karma of the past, or also because of the sins of our forefathers and other things? Actually, it is, both are correct. But actually, it is only because of our karma. But because of our karma, I have come, taken birth in a family where the forefathers have committed some sins which is going to come back to us. Did you follow this point? The sins have been committed by the forefathers, and because of that, their descendants are going to suffer. And according to my karma, I get birth in that family, so that I am also going to suffer the same things. So this arrangement, this divine arrangement is made by the Lord. Karmana daivanetrena. By the destiny, providence arranges under the superintendence of the Paramatma, which Atma is going to get whom as a father, mother, and so on. So this is all a wonderful complex arrangement of the Lord. So thank you very much for your patience and your kind attention. Now please take prasadam.